This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Cashing Out rolls on from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. Appreciate you hanging out with us all night long. SiriusXM Channel 158, YouTube TV, and the VSiN Watch app. We are sweating out a bet on Jacksonville State. We got 2 points. They closed as three-point favorites. They're up 17-13 in the Salute to Veterans Bowl with 2 minutes to go. They just picked off Troy, but now they're facing a 3rd and 6 at the 2 minute warning. So this could be dicey for our bet if they don't convert on this third down, and they're not going to convert. Troy has a chance to win the game with a touchdown drive here with under 2 minutes to go. So keep you posted on what goes down with the Salute to Veterans Bowl. But right now I have to cover a lot of ground with my next guest. He's Cole Thompson. You know him. SEC Unfiltered, Texans Wire, Sports Talk 790 in Houston, and he joins us now here on the Progressive Guest Line. My friend, you got to frame it for me when it comes to Houston Texans, because I think you thought heading into the year, starting off 1-3, you're probably going, oh no, it's going to be another wasted season. This team's not going to make the playoffs. There's going to be talk about firing DeMeco Ryan, CJ Stroud taking a step back, and all of a sudden, I don't know about you, but I think this is the last team anyone wants to see in the playoffs. What do you think of the way things have gone so far for Houston?
Okay, Dustin, let's start off with this. Number one, if you thought that CJ Stroud and DeMeco Ryans were on any hot seat, go ahead and grab the spray bottle and just make sure that you get rid of all the non-believers out there, because that was never the case. But what's interesting is that CJ Stroud was not the reason why this team was able to turn it around. It was that Jacksonville game in week 10. Mm-hmm. Down by 16 going into the fourth quarter, mounting an incredible comeback behind Davis Mills, of all people. This is where the offense started to gel together. This is where your defense was kind of playing with its back against the wall. They got three critical stops, and lo and behold, that was the start of a six-game win streak. They rattled off victories in dominant fashion over Buffalo and then Indianapolis, and they end basically the Chiefs season, and they dismantled the Cardinals, where they scored on 8 of their 10 drives on the afternoon. They close out the year with the game against the Raiders, the Chargers, and the Colts, and the Colts game is at home. This is a team that is playing with house money right now, because the offense, basically the rule around the building is, if you can get to 20, we feel confident that we're going to win the football game. And that's kind of the beauty about what this team is, with an underwhelming play caller and Nick Caley, the inability to run the football at an efficient rate, not really being able to win vertically down the field with names outside of Nico Collins. Their defense is just so elite, and the fact that they're able to win consistently at the line of scrimmage, the fact they're able to win with pressure rates, and they're number two in the NFL, only behind the Chicago Bears in turnover differential. This is a team that absolutely is playing with fire. This is a team that's playing with momentum, and they have an opportunity to end the year on a 9-game win streak going into the playoff. You're 100% right. This is probably the one team that nobody in the AFC wants to see on their radar if they're going to be making a run to Santa Clara.
Yeah, the defense is everywhere. They got the two edge rushers. Stingley is shutting down every top target he's dealing with. But to me, in the Arizona game, they won 40-20. C.J. Stroud looked like rookie C.J. Stroud. 22 of 29, 260, three touchdowns, efficient, big plays right out of the gate to Nico Collins. What'd you make of the way the offense looked, especially they didn't have Nick Chubb, and Jawar Jordan, the rookie, stepped up and had a monster day as well?
Yeah, Woody Marks, after the second quarter, left with an ankle injury. They said that if they wanted to get him back in the game, they could have, but they really wanted to see what Jawar Jordan was able to do. And two explosive runs later, we're talking about the Texans being able to capitalize and put more points on the board with the Dalton Schultz touchdown. I think that you said it perfectly. We saw vintage CJ Stroud from 2023. Now, the problem with that, Dustin, is this is only the second time all year we've seen him be vintage 2023 CJ Stroud, which ultimately leads to the question of, well, what happens if you start to see regression set on in the playoffs? What happens if the offensive line is unable to win at the line of scrimmage against better defensive fronts? What happens if they're playing on the road and it's a cold environment and you don't have the backing of NRG Stadium? Those are all going to be tests that I think that we see 2 weeks from now when they travel out to Los Angeles to take on the Chargers. But the two things that you really can like about what CJ Stroud did in this game and what he started to do a lot more of. Number one, when he's at the line of scrimmage, he is now realizing where the pressure is coming, and he is calling audibles in a timely manner. He is rushing to the line to make sure that there is enough time for him to be able to survey the field, make a switch, and be able to get everybody on the same page. And the second thing is, he is throwing the football away. He would much rather go ahead and see a play on 3rd and 6 and be able to convert there than take a sack. Now it'd be 3rd and 16, and they're basically out of field goal range, and they can't capitalize and get any points. The one caveat that I will say when it comes to the Texans that still worries me, specifically with their offense, it's two main elements. The first is the careless penalties from the offensive line. You're at least going to get 2 or 3 per game, whether it be an illegal motion, whether it be a false start, whether it be a holding call, and they still are one of the worst teams inside the red zone. This season, they rank 30th out of 32 teams in red zone efficiency. The only two teams worse, Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens, and the New Orleans Saints, who are starting a 26-year-old rookie quarterback.
Wow. That's going to be an issue. But at the same point in time, we go back to what you started with. The defense says, if we can keep you to 20, we think we can win the game. So field goals are a big deal when it comes to Houston Texans games. Cole Thompson's with us. Check him out, TexansWire.com, SEC Unfiltered, covering college football, at Mr. Cole Thompson on X. How about the division? Jacksonville's still favored, minus 145. Houston's plus $1.20. Do you think that they can win this division here with the way the schedule shakes out?
Well, the first thing is you're going to need to get a little bit of help from outside noise, whether that be Jacksonville losing to Indianapolis, whether that be losing this weekend to Denver. You have got to get somebody else to make this an even playing field. Then the Texans have got to win on out, because right now the Texans are sitting at 5-1 in the division if they can win against the Indianapolis Colts. If somehow you're able to then get the loss with Indianapolis over Jacksonville, Jacksonville would be sitting at 4-2. You would end up being at 5-1. Even if you were tied with the same record, you with the head-to-heads and the more wins in the division would get the nod. You'd be hosting a playoff game. The other thing that you got to look forward to is that the Texans still have got to win on out, because that they're not guaranteed a playoff spot. Dustin, they're the only team in the AFC this weekend that actually can't clinch a spot. They have to wait an extra week and go up against a Los Angeles Chargers team that also has to win and hope for a bunch of chaos for them to guarantee their spot in the college. For them to guarantee their spot in the playoffs. So a lot of things need to go their way. I still lean that the Texans, being as a team that feels like they've been in the situation before, they know how to close out games. And to be completely transparent, the Jaguars have been going up against bottom dwellers and teams that are not going to the playoffs over the last few weeks. Let's see them actually have to go face a team on the road that has a number one defense and is able to play with fuel behind them and find ways to be able to capitalize in the fourth quarter behind Bo Nix before we start crowning them the favorites in the AFC South. I think that Jacksonville deserves a lot of credit for what they've been able to accomplish this year behind a new coach in Liam Cohen, but I've still seen Trevor Lawrence look dreadful in critical moments throughout his NFL career. Now you're telling me 9 weeks into this new tenure of him running the show with Liam Cohen, everything is peachy keen? I'll believe it when I see it against an elite defense like Denver on the road.
All right, let me ask you about this. We'll get to the college football playoff here. They're right now the fifth shot on the betting board to win the Super Bowl, the Texans. They're 11-1 behind the Rams, the Seahawks, the Broncos, and the Bills. AFC landscape, you got no Mahomes and the Chiefs. There's a chance there's no Baltimore and Lamar. Burrow and the Bengals aren't going to be a part of it. So you're worried about Denver. You're worried about Buffalo. You're worried about the Patriots to a degree. You think this team can make it and potentially win a Super Bowl? Are they that good?
I'll go a step further and say I'm worried about one team, and that is the Buffalo Bills. It feels like this is the year of destiny for Buffalo. You don't have to worry about Lamar Jackson. You don't have to worry about Joe Burrow. You don't have to worry about Patrick Mahomes. And by the way, you have an MVP quarterback that just found out he's about to become a father, and he wants to go bring his little child into the world of knowing what a Super Bowl champion is like out in Orchard Park, something that fan base has never accomplished before. So that to me is a worry. It's easy to go ahead and say you were able to get pressure on a team in the second half when you were playing at home. But right now, if the season were to end today, Buffalo would still have the head-to-head in terms of record over the Texans, which means they'd be playing at Highmark Stadium. In my opinion, that's the only team that I worry about in the AFC. But at the end of the day, Dustin, I've seen this matchup unfortunately play out before. And I think that a lot of people are talking about what the Texans have been able to look like over the last few weeks. Talk about the Los Angeles Rams. They're playing with house money, and they're playing like an fire intensity. They got the coach of the year, in my opinion, with Sean McVay. They got the MVP, in my opinion, with Matthew Stafford. They got an all-pro wide receiver in Puka Nacua. They got great offensive line play, a great defensive front. They're adding pressure up the middle with the interior. Until proven otherwise, I think the Los Angeles Rams are the team to beat in the NFL. The Texans may be able to make it to Santa Clara, but I'm not sure if they're going to be able to go ahead and beat up on Los Angeles. A team with that much experience, very hard to take down in their own environment.
Cole Thompson is our guest. Check him out, Texans Wire, as well as SEC Unfiltered, covering college football. Let's talk playoff. Get started on Friday. Alabama, Oklahoma, a rematch in Norman. Right now, the Tide are laying 1.5. The total's 40.5. How do you see this one shaking out?
Alabama's got to be able to move the football efficiently when it comes to third down. I think that this is a great defensive front for Oklahoma. And by the way, Dustin, I don't know if you remember this, but R. Mason Thomas, the star pass rusher, did not face off against the Crimson Tide in that matchup back in Tuscaloosa. He will be active in this game. So best of luck trying to slow him down. What I think is going to be the key element is, can you get the ball out in space to guys like Josh Cuevas and to guys like Jam Miller? Because that was a key element of why they struggle to move the football against a team like Georgia. And also, are you able to win with time of possession? Alabama is number 8 in the country in time of possession. If they can do that, as much as I do believe that this is a national championship level defense out in Norman, they have a JV level offense that is trying to be able to just hit bombs down Baghdad to their star receivers. I don't think you're going to be able to do that against a top 5 secondary. Give me the Crimson Tide, but I am hammering the under in this game. In fact, if you're being a smart person, I'd probably maybe lean away from it. But that's why we always go ahead and say, sometimes don't listen to the experts. Listen to your gut. Your gut's telling you to go ahead and pick the Alabama Crimson Tide.
Yeah, I'm on the under in that one. I think it's going to be old school SEC. He's Cole Thompson. Check him out. Texans Wire, SEC Unfiltered, Sports Talk, 790 in Houston at Mr. Cole Thompson on X. Appreciate you staying up and doing this, my friend. I believe it is now your bedtime.
Talk to you soon, Dustin. Later.
Great stuff from our guy, Cole. We'll do a deep dive into the Denver Broncos coming up here in 20 minutes. Another buddy of mine, Anello Piero, covers the team for 104.3 The Fan. He and I were both on the same side of Bo Nix earlier in the year. We were not huge fans. I've somewhat come around. Has my buddy Anello done that? He covers the Broncos. We'll get his thoughts. But coming up next, I'll tell you why this team is in a perfect spot as they are 6-3 against the spread as a favorite this year.
VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's Cashing Out, VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Dustin Sweetelson, broadcasting, as always, from the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. This place was jumping earlier for the NBA Cup. It got a lot of buzz in town. I do have to say that having these games being played in Vegas, living in Vegas, now I'm kind of regretting as a Knicks fan not going to the games. I'm talking myself into this. I'm spin-zoning myself into believing the Knicks winning the NBA Cup. They won tonight, by the way, 124-113 over San Antonio, that it matters. And you know what? How about this? I have the Knicks 16-1 to win the title. Did that do anything to their betting odds? Let me look right now. Does them proving that they can win a championship, I think the context in which how they did it, where it wasn't solely dependent on Jalen Brunson hitting all the big shots, I think that matters here. Because that was the tweak. That was the adjustment that they were making. Tom Thibodeau out, Mike Brown in. An investment in some of the bench pieces, using Tyler Kolek more, bringing in Jordan Clarkson, having Gershon Yabusele come aboard, wanting to make sure other guys in the lineup play a part. And tonight, OG Anunoby had a great game. He had 28 points. So maybe I can spin zone and convince myself this matters. Looking at the betting market, they are your favorites in the East. They're 13-1 to win the title. But in front of them are 4 teams from the West. The market does not respect the Knicks and the Eastern Conference that they're going to walk through. But I guess what I'd say to that is, you know, you can only take care of what's in front of you. And if what's in front of you is a watered-down Eastern Conference that leads you to the finals, anything can happen in a 7-game series. So for New York, I'm spin-zoning this and convincing myself this is a good thing for the Knicks to prove that they can win big games, those T-shirt and hat games, that that's how the game ends. You get a T-shirt, you get a hat, and the ones that had your name aren't going to some foreign country for some kids to wear that'll never see the light of day. I think that matters here for the New York Knicks. So that's where we stand with the NBA Cup. We'll hear from the New York Knicks a little bit later on in the program, but right now, you know, it's Tuesday. The dust has settled. All the information is available when it comes to football. So what we're going to hit you with now is rank and file, looking at all the numbers, the best teams against the spread to the total in the NFL, college basketball, and the NBA. So we'll begin in the NFL, which is what you really care about here. And your best teams covering the number this year, not a surprise, and they're going to meet up on Thursday Night Football. The Rams and the Seahawks are both 10-4 against the spread. Then you have the Bears at 9-5 against the spread, along with Jacksonville. See, the thing about Jacksonville is so interesting is that the market has not really figured out who they are, and it's been like up and down, but they've righted this ship, and they were underdogs early. Now they're going to be favorites late. They're 9-5 covering the number, first year Liam Cohen. New England's 8-5-1 against the spread. San Francisco 8-5-1 against the spread. Some interesting information, though, to pull from those teams. The Rams, 10-3 against the spread as a favorite. They're laying 1.5 at Seattle this week. You've got the 49ers, 6-2-1 against the spread as a favorite, 5-0 against the spread as a road favorite. They're laying 6 on the road in Indianapolis on Monday night. And then Detroit, this is the big boy. Not only is Detroit 6-3 against the spread as a favorite this year, they're laying 7 at home against Pittsburgh. And remember, they're coming off a loss. Dan Campbell, 24-10, covering the number off of loss, 23-11 against the spread to the first half number off of a loss. So that is always something you want to think about with Dan Campbell, is laying that number, coming off a loss, getting things going, plus Pittsburgh coming off a win. That is a perfect combination of events meeting at Ford Field on Sunday. The Chargers 3-0 against the spread as dogs. LA right now against Dallas, catching 1.5. Carolina 7-4 against the spread as an underdog. They're catching 3, hosting Tampa Bay. Totals 45.5. But more importantly for Carolina, 4-1 against the spread as a home dog this year. And then the Cleveland Browns. They are 10-point underdogs at home against Buffalo. Totals 42.5 in that game. Cleveland's 3-1 against the spread as a home dog. I know it's ugly, but with the way that defense plays and how sloppy Buffalo looks offensively at times, Josh Allen is special. Josh Allen can mitigate a lot of issues, but on the road, AFC North team in Cleveland, where it just feels like it's always overcast and the field is just mucked up, I kind of like Cleveland. It's an ugly dog, but I kind of like Cleveland taking the 10 points just because Buffalo's not going to stretch the field. They're going to try to run the football. They're going to use short stuff to the tight ends, throw into running backs out of the backfield. I don't know if there's going to be explosives there, and if there's no explosives, as long as Shador doesn't turn the ball over, I think they can cover that number, which is kind of a wild thing to say because the Buffalo Bills might win the Super Bowl this year. All right, those are the best teams against the spread. Here are your worst teams against the spread in the National Football League. We'll begin with the Cleveland Browns, who are 5-9 against the spread, but as I just mentioned, good as a home dog at 3-1 covering the number. Las Vegas, 5-9 against the spread, as is Tampa, Washington, Baltimore. The Kansas City Chiefs, 5-8-1 against the spread here. So a couple things that are worth noting. Atlanta, horrible in the favorite role. You want to back Atlanta as a dog, not as a favorite. They're laying 2.5 on the road in Arizona. Totals 47.5. Atlanta's 1-6 against spread as a favorite. 0-3 against the spread as a road favorite. Denver 2-7 against the spread as a favorite this year. Right now, Denver, I believe the number is 3 against Jacksonville. My page just moved on me. Broncos, yeah, 3 against Jacksonville. Dallas 2-5 against the spread, short favorites against the Chargers this week. And then Washington 3-8 against the spread as underdogs. They are indeed underdogs, taking on the Philadelphia Eagles, which are a really difficult team to project when it comes to the futures market. I'll play a clip from Jalen Hurts a little bit later in the show, but the Philadelphia Eagles, by the way, they play on Saturday. They're laying 6.5 at Washington. I kind of want to lay it with them, but I don't totally trust them to do what they need to do there. How about totals? These are your best teams to the over this season. Dallas, despite the moves made on defense a few weeks ago at the deadline, 10-4 to the over, 71.4% for them. Detroit and Tennessee, along with the Giants, Jets, and Arizona, all 9-5 to the over. The Rams are 5-1 to the over on the road. They're at Seattle. That total's 43.5, but I don't like the over in that game. I kind of like the under. I think I'm actually going to end up betting the under. Arizona, 6-1 to the over at home. See, that's one that I can get behind. Arizona at home offensively gets in sync. They're taking on Atlanta. Atlanta can end up scoring a bunch against them. They're going to have to keep pace, extra possessions. I like the over 47.5 there with Arizona and Atlanta. Green Bay, 6-1 to the over on the road. See, that's interesting because you think about the defense, and now no Micah Parsons in the mix for them, and they're going to play on Saturday as well. They're taking on Chicago. By the way, I think the wrong team's favored here. I think Chicago should be favored, but the total of 46.5, kind of like the over there. I think both teams are going to score. It seems a little bit low. And then Jacksonville, they're 5-1 to the over on the road this year are the Jaguars. And for Jacksonville, they're going to Denver. Total's 45.5. I like the over in Green Bay and Denver, or the under last week in Green Bay and Denver. My lean is usually unders with Denver. I kind of like it there, but I was wrong about it last week, so I'm going to stay away this time around. How about the under teams? Kansas City and New Orleans, your best teams to the under. That's crazy. Think about that coming into the year. Both of them 10-4 to the under. Kansas City was a team people thought could win the Super Bowl. The Saints were thought of as being the worst team in football, yet they both have the same over-under record. Houston, 9-4-1 to the under. The Eagles, 9-5 to the under. Then you have Denver, Las Vegas, and the Chargers, both, all three, 8-6 to the under. Couple of notes here for New Orleans. So 10-4 to the under on the year, 6-1 to the under at home for the Saints. Probably worth thinking about there. I like their under this week. I believe it was 40.5 last time I looked. Just want to pull it up here. Yeah, against the Jets, they're laying 4.5. Total's 40.5. I like the under a lot, actually, in that spot. Buffalo's 5-2 to the under on the road. I think that tracks. Maybe instead of taking Cleveland, I go under 42.5. Because I don't think Buffalo's looking to get anyone injured. They don't really have that type of depth to do that on the road at Cleveland. That defense for Cleveland will make things tough for them on the road. I think under 42.5 is the way to look there. Raiders, 5-2 to the under on the road. That just kind of tells you every team, if you notice, is scoring against the Raiders. The Raiders don't pull their end of the stick. They don't do their job. And this week at Houston, Houston's laying 14.5. 38.5 is the total. The under may not be low enough for a game involving that Raiders offense and that offensive line going up against that front and secondary for the Houston Texans. And then finally, Tampa Bay, 5-2 to the under on the road against Carolina. I think the Panthers defense isn't getting enough credit this year for how they've looked. They've really made strides in the way they get after the quarterback. Obviously, J.C. Horn is making a bunch of plays in that secondary. Total in the game with Tampa this week is 45.5. I don't know if I'd touch the under there, though. Something tells me with the urgency both teams are playing with, facing each other 2 out of 3 games to end the season, I think we may have a shootout on our hands with how hungry they are, how much they need to get right. You're going to see the most creativity because you don't want to fall behind. They have the same record. You don't want to fall back here facing each other. So there's going to be a bit of desperation here, and I think that actually leads to an over situation, but I'm not betting that game as of right now. So that's where we stand with rank and file, all the information in the NFL. We'll look at the NBA and college basketball a little bit later on in the program. Hey, the college football playoff, it kicks off on Friday, and VSiN's got the guide for you to bet the postseason with confidence. Our college football betting guide is out right now. Full previews of every first round game, college football playoff overview and insider breakdowns, best bets, custom brackets, plus Steve Mackinnon's power ratings, bold picks across the network. You can buy this guide right now for just $14.99, or you can upgrade to VSiN Pro, get the guide included, plus access to everything we do over at the website. Get your guide now at VSiN.com/CFP. That's VSIN.com/CFP. Will the Denver Broncos represent the AFC in the Super Bowl? We'll discuss next.
Here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Cashing Out rolls on from the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. Appreciate you making us part of your night, however you may be tuning in. Sirius XM Channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. A lot going on here in the sports landscape. In case you missed it, the salute to Veterans Bowl just ended. Jack State with the win 17-13. They caught the steam, went from 3-point dogs to 3-point favorites. They end up covering any which way. We split on the game as we bet a prop on a player to go over 98.5 rush yards. He finished with negative 10, so that did not go well there. But we did cash with Jacksonville State. So we'll put that in the past. Also, the Knicks won the NBA Cup. We'll have more on that a little bit later in the show. But it's time to go back to the NFL because if you listen to the show every night, you know that me and the Denver Broncos have had a very dysfunctional relationship. And this goes back to the preseason. We had a lot of people on from Denver, including the guy we're about to talk to next, where I liked everything in place, but I questioned Bo Nix. And I've had to come off of my take about Bo Nix and what he is and what he isn't in the NFL. My assessment now of Bo Nix in year two is he's still not very good, but he is special. He's got something in his core that has him finding ways to take the Denver Broncos into victory. So I'm going to ask my next guest. He is Anil Opiro, Denver Sports 104.3 The Fan, at Media by AP on X. Anilo, am I being fair in saying Bo Nix, he's still not that good, but there's something special about him that just finds ways to win games?
I don't know if he's not that good. I mean, I think the fact of the matter is he's coming off the best game of his career against the Green Bay Packers, down 9 points in that game, 4 touchdown passes to 4 different receivers. I think what you saw from Bo Nix in that game against Green Bay is, I think, what gives a lot of optimism and hope to Broncos country out here locally, that they can go out there and get this one seat, which I think is huge for their Super Bowl aspirations. So, look, you and I were kind of in agreement that the jury was still out on Bo Nix. I think you were a little bit more down on him than I was. I was cautiously optimistic, but you can't question the way the kid has been playing throughout the course of this 11-game win streak. He's been nails when it's mattered most.
Yeah, and what's interesting is a lot of this has come, the development of Bo Nix is without J.K. Dobbins. He's been forced into this role, and this is kind of a make-or-break scenario for a lot of young quarterbacks. When they don't have the balance of the run game, there's more on their shoulders, and that's when they tend to crumble. He's actually thriving right now. When you look at Denver's offense, do you see any way for them to fix the run game? I know R.J. Harvey's nice, but he still feels like more of a receiving back. Is there anything they can do to find balance with this offense right now?
Well, they love some R.J. Harvey, and it's going to be interesting. He got his ribs bruised up in that game against Green Bay, so we don't know what the injury status is for him moving forward with the Jacksonville game. I would imagine that he's going to play, but maybe not at 100% potentially for that game. And, you know, the Broncos love themselves some R.J. Harvey. Sean Payton in particular was the guy that wanted R.J. Harvey to be their, you know, draftee at the running back position, and he's really come along. I mean, the start of the season, you leaned on J.K. Dobbins, who was one of the best running backs, you know, call a spade there in the NFL prior to his injury. And there is a chance that he could eventually come back for this postseason run for the Denver Broncos. But R.J. Harvey's really come along nicely. I mean, he's a red zone machine, getting a lot of touches, had a touchdown against Green Bay, I believe 2 against Washington, and has really stepped in nicely for R.J. Harvey. But beyond him, man, I mean, you've got Jaleel McLaughlin and you've got Tyler Bidet, a little shaky with respect to the running back room. But Bo Nix has done such a good job of understanding the playbook and his ability to improv on the run. I mean, you saw, you know, multiple times throughout the course of the game against the Packers that not only is he, you know, efficient in the pocket, he's actually even better outside of it. So the impromptu-esque play of Bo Nix has been able to kind of nullify the lack of a run game per se for the Denver Broncos, the lack of a number one back with J.K. Dobbins being out as R.J. Harvey continues to progress in his rookie season.
Anil Opiro's with us at Media by AP on X, Denver Sports 104.3 The Fan in Denver. Talk to me about the weapons, man. I know coming in the year, we all knew what Cortland Sutton is. Troy Franklin's had some big moments. I think Pat Bryant's come along. I know he's dealing with an injury. There's always like that factor of how do you work in Marvin Mims. Do you like the complement of weapons on the outside for Bo Nix? And you think it's good enough for them come the postseason?
Well, obviously, it's good enough for an 11-game win streak for this Denver Broncos team and to have him in the driver's seat for the one seed. Look, I was skeptical about the weapons. I think Cortland Sutton is a nice receiver. I think Troy Franklin has taken a nice step for this team this year. But their offensive weapons don't jump off the page as they do with, like, a Ja'Marr Chase, you know, as they do with Philly and Saquon and A.J. Brown, despite them being a little off this season as well. So it's been good enough. And, you know, I think a lot of it comes down to the play calling of Sean Payton. And again, the clutch gene, like the team first mentality that this organization has right now. Like they really, I know it's somewhat of a cliche, but they don't have a lot of divas. They don't have a lot of drama. They're a relatively drama-free football team right now. And a lot of unselfish guys in the wide receiver room, running back room, and the offensive line is taking care of Bo Nix here as well. So yes, like, is the Broncos, you know, weapons and skill positions going to jump off the page? No, that's not the case. But they've done a good job of piecing it together when they've needed to win these games.
All right, talk to me about big picture in the AFC, because they're actually the favorite right now. They're shorter than the Buffalo Bills. There's not going to be a Kansas City Chiefs. After Buffalo, it's Houston 5-1, New England 6-1, Jacksonville, who they'll see this week at 6.5-1. When you think about this tenure of Sean Payton, do you believe he still has his fastball? I questioned it coming into the year. I'm starting to believe that he absolutely still has his fastball the way things are going. And do you trust him to find a way to win the AFC this year with that open playoff landscape?
Yeah, I mean, this is a team, you know, from the coaching staff down to the players that has complete belief in what they're trying to accomplish this season. I'm also holding Broncos 14-1 myself. I also have Buffalo at 12-1. So we'll see how that shakes out in the postseason. But, you know, again, going back to like, you know, the home underdog narrative that we saw last week against the Green Bay Packers, you know, we heard from Jonathan Franklin Myers, Garrett Bowles after the game. That was one of the first things out of his mouth. I mean, there is a very, very strong level of continuity in this building. With respect to the question about Sean Payton and his fastball, no, I don't think he has lost it. I think if anything, Bo Nix is becoming more and more comfortable in Sean Payton's system. And that's why you've seen them up the ante offensively across the board is, you know, Sean Payton, you know, for lack of a better phrase, is a bit stubborn with his play calling. I think he has conformed to Bo Nix's strengths to a certain extent, but I think the progression and the belief from this Broncos team in particular with this offense stems from Bo and Cortland Sutton and Troy Franklin having a better understanding of what Sean wants to do. And it really starts and ends with the quarterback. And I just think the relationship that Bo and Sean have right now is very special, and we'll see how far it could take them.
Anil Opiro is our guest, Denver Sports 104.3, The Fan at Media by AP on X. Who scares you the most in the AFC? If you're going to match up with any of these teams in the postseason, obviously a little PTSD from Buffalo last year, but I think this is a different team. They've shown some growth. Is it Houston, who kind of wants to do the same thing you do defensively, and that quarterback and CJ Stroud, you know, talent-wise, is probably better than Bo Nix? Who scares you the most when it comes to the AFC postseason?
I'd have to say it's Buffalo, and I know that the Broncos played the Houston Texans and won that game 18-15 earlier in the season, but that, of course, was not with CJ Stroud playing quarterback. I believe it was the first game that Davis Mills was inserted as the starter. I just think Buffalo has that firepower on offense. I mean, you saw it 2 weeks ago against Cincinnati. You saw it down 21-0 against New England. Now, look, I think Denver's going to be a really tough out in the playoffs, assuming they do get the one seed, and you know, the playoffs run through Denver in the AFC. They're, I believe, the only team remaining in the NFL that is undefeated at home. So that's what they have going for them. But I think it has to be the Buffalo Bills. You mentioned the playoff game last year. Denver got blown out in that one. But I will say, I think they've learned from that, and they're a much improved and a much sharper team this year than they were at that point last year. But I think it's Buffalo. I got a lot of respect for Houston, but you can't shy away from Josh Allen.
Talk to me about this week. Jacksonville comes to town. They've been hot as well. They've really figured a lot out since that loss to Houston that they blew in the second half. Denver's a 3-point favorite. Total's 45.5. I love the under last week against Green Bay. It had no chance. We went way over. How do you see this game playing out this week with the Jags?
Yeah, I also love the under in that game, and that did me no good. So, no, we'll see how it shakes out. I think the line is priced appropriately. I think the question here is Jacksonville with that 5-game win streak, right? Their offense has been high octane. No Travis Hunter, but Jacoby Myers, I think, has been a real difference maker for this Jacksonville offense. And also something to note for the Broncos defensively here is they're going to be down Brandon Jones, one of their safeties who was recently placed on injury reserve, having an injury in that game against Green Bay. Also some stuff with Justin Sternad. We'll see what shakes out there. So you'll likely see some more PJ Locke. And at this point, like, what more do you want to see from this Denver Broncos team? I was one of those guys that was reading a lot into this Green Bay matchup after seeing the way that they were able to rally and put up points in that game against Green Bay with a respectable offense. It makes me think that Denver can, you know, keep pace with the Jacksonville Jaguars should it turn into a shootout. So we shall see. But this Denver Broncos team is believing right now. Broncos country's hyped up, and they're damn near impossible to beat at home.
Hey, I'm starting to believe. I'm joining the bandwagon. He is Anil Opiro. Check him out on Denver Sports 104.3 at Media by APNX. Appreciate you doing this as always, my friend. I think we're going to be doing this very deep into the postseason.
Anytime you want, my friend. It's going to be interesting. Buckle up, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, it's definitely. Hey, when Bo Nix is involved, I think it's going to be a wild ride, because usually it means first three quarters don't matter, and then everything flips in the fourth quarter. I still keep coming back to, I don't think he's that good, but I also think he's special. And there's a little Tebow in him, but he's significantly more talented and a better quarterback overall than Tim Tebow was. So with that, that creates special moments and opportunities. And an AFC that's starting to open up, and as much as Buffalo is a team that's been there before, that's not the same Buffalo. There's no reason Denver or Houston or New England or some new blood to get in the mix. into the Super Bowl representing the AFC. We'll tackle the college football playoff coming up on the other side and why I love an under in one of these games.
Here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Dustin Sweetelson with you from the Circa Sportsbook, downtown Las Vegas, Sirius XM Channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSIN Watch app, radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. Want to remind you, if you missed any part of the program, a bunch of great conversations. Anil Opiro just now in the Denver Broncos, about 45 minutes ago. Cole Thompson looking at the Texans and Alabama and Oklahoma. More on that to come here in a moment. You can go back and download the show wherever you get your podcasts. Also, check us out on the VSIN Watch app. You can listen and watch live or go back and watch your favorite shows, favorite clips, all available on the VSIN Watch app. All right, the college football playoff. The clock is ticking. We're getting closer and closer to these games finally happening. You know, it's a long buildup. We get a couple weeks of thinking about these teams. So you would think the betting market is adjusting a lot. I would tell you that it's not. I am blown away at how little movement at this point on Tuesday, with games starting on Friday, we have in these markets. Alabama open laying 1.5, total of 40.5 at Oklahoma. It is now Alabama 1.5 and 40.5. It has not budged there. Although there were some books that did have Oklahoma favored, and it's now pretty much Alabama across the board as your favorite. Good luck if you feel strongly about either side in that game. James Madison and Oregon. We opened Oregon minus 21. Although I did see some 20.5s out there. Total of 50.5. This total's moved 3 points. It's down to 47.5, and it's 21.5 with Oregon laying it right now. Tulane and Mississippi. Ole Miss open lane 16.5, 56.5 was your total. It's now 17.5 and 56.5 on the total. So a slight move there when it comes to the side. And then Miami and A&M. We opened A&M minus 3.5, a total of 51.5. It is A&M minus 3.5 and a total of 51 right now. So very, very slight movement. Either that tells us these numbers are super sharp, or the bookmakers really don't know what to make of these matchups as well, and they're just going to wait for that steam to come in, the money to come in, and start moving these numbers. We'll see how this plays out. I like the under in a couple of these games, and the first one is the one that'll get started on Friday, Alabama and Oklahoma. I bet under 41 as soon as this thing came out. I don't see how either team's getting in the 20s. I really don't. I think for Alabama, a lot of questions about their offense. Ty Simpson, especially having to go on the road and some injury concerns for him. How much does he move the football against an Oklahoma defense that's incredible? Seventh in scoring, third against the run, and 31st against the pass. It's going to be tough sledding for Alabama, having to go into a crazy environment where that fan base has been so desperate to be involved in these playoff games again. I mean, it's been such a long time since they were just racking up the national championships. And now they got the Tide coming to town. The only thing I hate about this matchup is one thing about college football. They have so many different versions of maroon, right? People are like, no, that's crimson, whatever you call Oklahoma's number. It's crimson. It's not maroon. It's maroon. And how come every team's got a different version of maroon? Florida State calls it garnet. It's maroon. It's a hideous color. And I hate when we have to watch two teams play each other. It's going to look like a spring game. Uniforms are both so boring, so unimaginative. Can we get a stripe? Can we get a logo? Can we get something on either of these teams to make them pop a little bit in a moment? Thank God for Oregon. Anyway, I digress. Back to Alabama and Oklahoma. I do like the under. The last meeting, 23-21 in Tuscaloosa. Now we're going to Norman, which favors Oklahoma, which means they'll dictate the style of this fight. Bama's output versus their last four FBS opponents, 7-27, 21-20. That's 18.75 points per game. Oklahoma 10-2 to the under this year. Alabama 8-5 to the under. Bama 2-0 to the under as a dog this season. And Oklahoma 6-1 to the under at home. Kalen DeBoer, just 2-6 covering the number as a road favorite at Bama. 1-7 when a favorite of 7 or less, 0-2 to the under in that role. And then DeBoer, 11-4 to the under in SEC play in his career at Alabama. Venables, 0-2 against the spread as a home dog of 7 or less. So, again, I don't trust either of them on the side. Venables, 7-1 to the under when he's coming off of a bye week to prepare. But the big thing that could have been hanging over this game was the status of Kalen DeBoer, because as soon as things went down with Sharon Moore at Michigan, he was the name being floated around, as if Alabama isn't one of the premier programs and jobs to have in the United States right now. I understand why, because there's a level of having to follow in Saban's footsteps. The expectations are so unrealistic, where if he has a bad year, they want to kick him out. In fact, he's in the playoff right now, and if he loses this game, they'll still want to kick him out. Maybe for his own sanity, he wants to go to a place in Michigan that could appreciate him, because while I love Kalen DeBoer, I think he's an offensive genius, I think he has a really calming presence as a leader. But you have to be fair that there's not really a fit for him in the South. He doesn't have ties to the South, so maybe that could be his out, to get to Michigan, a premier program that the job is thought of as good, if not better, than Alabama. He could have walked away from the situation. But Kalen DeBoer was asked about all the rumors about him potentially being up for the Michigan job, and he had this to say when he met with the media.
All right, I put a statement out yesterday because first of all, our guys handle distractions phenomenally. It's been that way all season long. They continue to do that. And so, but I also, you know, knew that yesterday and today was pretty important. I wasn't going to see until today to address it. So that's why I put that out there. A lot of the same things I said before, you know, a couple weeks ago when asked really the same question. Just, you know, feel completely supported. My family loves living here. Just all the things that we continue to build on. Love the progress. Haven't talked with anyone. No plans of talking with anyone. So just, I think that's a lot of what I said a couple of weeks ago, and it continues to be the same thing. Feel strong about it. And our guys, if there's been any distraction, I haven't seen it, haven't felt it. And so I'm really proud of the way they've handled whatever noise is out there. And again, we've probably all season long have dealt with enough noise to where it doesn't surprise me on how they handle this.
It's a good answer. That's a good answer from a leader, and like, he just never wavers. He never gets too high or low. I like Kalen DeBoer a lot. I think for his own sake, though, he should consider the Michigan job. I think Michigan would be way more patient. Let him do it his way. But let's be real. While I don't know who wins this game, whoever wins this game could go on a run. I know I'm catching some crap from one of my buddies who doesn't like that. I think if Alabama matches up with Indiana here in the playoff, Alabama could beat them. Alabama has a lot of issues, but that's still the Tide, man. I know it's not Nick Saban's group, but that is still a physical team. And I have an SEC bias. I'm one of those people. I just think that it is different there. And I love Cignetti. I love the Hoosiers. I was on their win total over this year. I was on them last year. Okay? I've loved everything they've done the last 2 years. This is a different world when you're taking on Ala freaking Bama. Even if they're not the normal Alabama, it is a different matchup. There is different pressures. And I think on the line of scrimmage, things will be very different for them going up against an SEC team if it ends up being the Crimson Tide for Illinois in the next round. But as far as this game goes with Oklahoma and Alabama, I love the under. I also love defensive coordinator for Alabama, Kane Womack. Guy was the head coach at South Alabama, decided, you know what? I'm going to go to the SEC. I'm going to prove what I could do at that level again, and I'm going to go get a job coming off of this that's bigger than with South Alabama and the Jaguars. And I think he has a really good matchup here, and he's going to play a role in our under because, you know, the Alabama defense is getting slept on. 36th against the run, 7th against the pass, taking on an Oklahoma team that can't run the football. They're not great at throwing it either, especially Mateer post that injury. Kane Womack was asked about the pressures of playing in a game like this with what's on the line, and he had this to say.
Let's not get it twisted. We've been playing win or go home since Florida State. So, I mean, this is just another game for us that means everything, you know. And I think that's the way our players have carried themselves. I think that's the way the coaches carry themselves. You're coaching for your life every single day. You're playing for your life and a chance to go play another one. Now, ultimately, this is win or go home. But you know, let's not get it twisted. It's been like that all season long.
Yeah, when you coach at Alabama, there's always pressure. But when you lose an opener to Florida State, oh, buddy, there's for sale signs in your yard. In fact, I think that's the most profitable business to be in, to be someone who sells for sale signs in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, or in any SEC town where that team loses a game. Oh, my. If I could buy stock in those companies during those games, I'd be a billionaire. You guys wouldn't even know who I was. All right. That's where we stand with that one. We'll talk about Ole Miss coming up with Tulane because I'm becoming a Pete Golden guy. The more I hear him speak, the more I hear him as a leader, as a dude with an opportunity here, I have a weird feeling about the Rebels. There's a galvanization that can happen when you're all going through trauma together. And I know their trauma isn't like compared to like big trauma in the world, but for those kids, they just got abandoned by their leader. Lane Kiffin said, I have a better chance to win a title starting over from scratch at LSU than I do with you guys who are actually one of the 12 teams in the playoff. And I think that can bring a group together to prove him wrong, to work together to make sure that they make a run here in this postseason. And Pete Golden, he's the opposite of Lane Kiffin. He's a guy that had to do it the hard way. He was in the Gulf South Conference when I was covering it at Delta State. Okay, this guy didn't have it easy. He didn't have the last name of a guy like his father, Monty Kiffin, to get him opportunities. Pete Golden had to work his way up small school to small school to small school, eventually getting to the SEC level, being at Alabama, and then going with Lane to Ole Miss. And now he's the head coach. He's not the interim head coach. He is locked in as the head coach going into next year. And I think that they can come together and they could go on a run, and it begins by taking on Ole Miss or Tulane, a team that they saw in the middle of September early in the year. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. But now it's time to hit the hardwood with college hoops on the other side of cashing out.